We're on page 18, and this is the story of Joseph. There is not enough space here to tell the whole story because there's so many ins and outs of this story. This is crazy. In the whole book of Genesis, chapters 37 to 50 is all about Joseph. Okay, and Joseph isn't even in the bloodline. He's not one of those main patriarchs. He's just Joseph, okay? But he has this huge part of the story, and a huge moral of his story is forgiveness. So it's a great, wonderful, beautiful story, but it's just crazy that he's got so much screen time in a sense. So starting at Genesis 37, we start being introduced to the character of Joseph. And we're going to break the story down to three parts. We're going to do pre-Egypt, Egypt, and then kind of post-Egypt. Okay, so pre-Egypt, Joseph is the favorite of his father. He's got, you know, a coat with long sleeves. It shows that it's very wealthy, very prestigious to have this. And he has all these prophetic dreams about how great he is and how his brothers are going to bow down to him. So his brothers are fed up and they try to kill him. But the oldest brother, Reuben, he's like, let's not kill him. Let's just, you know, throw him in this pit and let him die of starvation. But secretly, Reuben is thinking to himself, I'll come back here later and save the kid, okay? Judah, the fourth born, he sees the Ishmaelites, these nomadic people, go by on the way to Egypt. And he says, let's not kill him, let's sell him. Because he also is trying to save the life of his brother. But Reuben and Judah don't put their heads together and save him together. They both try to save him by themselves, so he ends up sold into slavery. And he goes off to Egypt, and then the brothers lie and tell Jacob that their son is dead. So that's very sad. Joseph ends up in Egypt doing well for himself as a really, really good servant, head of his master's household, until he's falsely accused of adultery and is thrown into jail under false pretenses. There, his prophetic dreams come in handy, though. So now we're moving into the in Egypt part of the story. Okay, so that was before Egypt. In Egypt, he is, you know, falsely imprisoned, and he's here with the baker and the butler, who are from Pharaoh's court, and he accurately predicts their dreams, and the butler goes on back to the Pharaoh's court and later remembers Joseph because the Pharaoh's having these dreams and they need an interpreter of dreams. And he's like, hey, I know this guy in jail who does this. So they pull Joseph out of jail. He'd been there for a while, and Joseph correctly interprets Pharaoh's dream about a famine coming to the land. So Joseph is actually raised up again. He's not the second in command of his master's house Potiphar anymore. He is the second in command in all of Egypt. And he gets married and he's got these two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And he's like living there, okay? He like lives there and this is his whole thing. Then, plot twist, his brothers come to Egypt because there's a famine and they're coming to beg for food. So here's kind of the after Egypt part of the story. Though I guess they're still in Egypt, forgive me. The brothers, they come and they beg for food, and Joseph wants to see if they're any different. They've left Benjamin at home, probably because Benjamin is the new favorite kid because he's the only other one of Rachel. So Joseph says, go get Benjamin. They bring him on back, and then he tests Benjamin. He frames him, and he sees if the brothers are willing to sell out their little brother, just like they sold him, or if they're going to protect him. And Judah steps up and leads the brothers to protect Benjamin. And then Joseph realizes they've changed. He has this really beautiful emotional speech in chapter 45 where he says, like, you know, you meant to be evil to me, but God used it for good. And look, I've saved us all because of this famine, because of God. So Joseph kind of gets the moral of the story. He gets it that his brother's evil, God used for good. And they move the whole family on down to Egypt, and they get a nice old piece of land down there, and they all survive the famine and everything is well, except for the fact that they're not supposed to leave the promised land. The promised land is where they live. So the fact that they move on down to Egypt puts them in trouble because later, in a couple pharaohs from now, the pharaoh enslaves the people, the Hebrew people, because there's a huge population of non-Egyptians living there on the land. They're a threat. So Joseph, when he is dying, by the way, asks the people to bring his bones from Egypt to the promised land, back home, and to be buried there. So he knows, he hopes at least, that they're going to go back home. He has no idea that it's going to take them 400 years of slavery, 40 years wandering the desert, you know, all sorts of things to go home. But anyway, that's kind of the long and short of Joseph. It's a great story. I would really recommend reading it. Yeah, like I said, Genesis 37 through the end, 50. But we're going to fill out this little chart here because there's actually a lot of ways that Joseph is like Jesus. So first thing on the chart is Joseph is the beloved firstborn of Rachel, and Jesus is the beloved, you know, firstborn and only son of Mary. Second one down is they both were sold. Joseph was sold for silver and abandoned by 11 brothers. Jesus was sold for silver and abandoned by 11 disciples. The third one down, Joseph was with two condemned men in jail, and Jesus was crucified with two condemned men on either side of him. Joseph was exalted to the right hand of Pharaoh. Jesus is exalted to the right hand of God. Joseph saves Israel and gives life-giving bread to Israel to save this small nation. And Jesus saves Israel as the microcosm for the world, and he gives life-giving bread, his own flesh. And then finally, Joseph, he reveals himself to his brothers, and he's not recognized after his rise to power. He's like, hey, this is me, by the way. And Jesus, after his resurrection, his rise to power, he reveals himself to the apostles. They don't recognize him. And he says, hey, it's me. So do you see these cool parallels between Joseph and Jesus? Like I said, Joseph does not get the birthright because he's not the firstborn. He's not the secondborn, thirdborn. He's all the way down to the 11th. So the birthright actually goes to Judah. Judah's the fourth born, but Jacob skips Reuben, Simeon, and Levi, and he says, the scepter shall not pass from Judah. So Judah is the one who gets the thing. And we have actually got a little section on Judah on the next page.